Mm-hmm.
You can eat. All right. Thank you so much, colleagues. I want to go to Mam Sibiya, then come to Honorable Mananiso, and then Honorable Chief. Mam Sibiya.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. I think some of the questions the Minister has already answered them. Having said that, MUT is to be under administration, would there be the same process taken as the mentioned universities in the presentation? Again, we MUT, what is the time frame given for MUT to make consideration on the appointment of the council and independent assessor? Thank you, Chairperson.
Siyabonga, Mam Sibiya. Honorable Mananiso.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I think one would want to welcome the presentation by the department and as well acknowledge and appreciate the remarks by the minister and the DG to say that at least the sense that we cannot fold our arms and then remain disgruntled, but there's more to be done in terms of what is happening in our institutions. On issues of four institutions that we're actually dealing with or zooming in today, I think I'm covered by other members who have spoken before, but one would want to say on the issue of vacancies, DG, that it is important that as a department you become intentional in terms of taking decisions, more especially on vacancies that are funded. We need to actually make sure that we occupy those particular vacancies. I think last week when we were engaging with the department on issues of TVET, where the chairperson said to you guys that it is important that you take the spirit of Premier Banyaza Lisufi of making sure that you employ people, credible people, eligible people who would serve this country. So important that moving forward, coming to the other quarter, we don't go and ask about issues such as the vacancies. They need to be filled ASAP. And then on the other issue, Chairperson, with regards to what is happening in the institutions, this culture, that is mafia tendencies, as others have alluded, I think it is important that we make an overall assessment to all institutions in terms of who is actually applying the Institutional Autonomy Act to the full, so that we deal, DG, with this issue that others are using it for their own benefit and other things. So in future, one would want to get to see the picture in terms of who's actually complying from A to Z. And so that when we speak as a portfolio committee in terms of what needs to be done, it's based on the facts that we have before us. And one would want to say, I had Honorable Khao Khao advice to say that perhaps there's a need of a study. But I think I don't want to prolong things that can be done by a person employed to do monitoring and evaluation in the department. Can the department assist us on other issues in terms of making assessment in all institutions about the status quo of spaces where we have put administration on? Did the administration work to what we mandated them to do or what? In all institutions, so that issues that we are speaking about, the gender transformation, they become part and parcel of the report. Because I have noted the remarks of the chairperson today, you know what? People must take note that when we speak here, we don't speak about personalities, but we're speaking about institutions. And for now, our interest as public servants here is the student, not yourself, not ourselves, and other people who are doing things in those particular institutions. So it is important that perhaps we get the holistic assessment in theory. What is the picture? And this issue of women inclusion and being equal to the task like our counterparts, what are the issues? with regards to that, because I believe so far, Honorable Chiwa, we've got many females in these institutions capable to actually, you know, be appointed in other responsibilities. The other thing that I've noted is that there's a plan to have a standard approach security plan in all these institutions. And I have noted that in other areas, DG alluded to say they are working with the premiers and as well with law enforcement agencies. So I want to suggest that can this thing be standardized in all institutions, that you would have an inclusion of the premier, be it maybe the premier would then deploy an MEC for public safety or it's something else, but can the office of the premiers be involved, district municipalities be involved, ward councillors be involved, and as well stakeholders. You know why? When these kids are protesting, those people would be able to be there to actually protect and prevent the major incident. So I just want to say, let us standardize the approach thereof in terms of who would be our key stakeholder when we actually unfold that particular project, the overall security measures in our areas. The other thing, DG, that I want to speak on is, for now, as I've been hearing people speaking about governance, management, and leadership, there's a concern that you guys from the department, you don't use a project management approach in terms of speaking to your problems. Because if you have identified a problem that, okay, my problem is because of I've hired Jane, who is not capable to execute 1-2-3 tasks. Therefore, your plan, it will be to capacitate me. But after capacitating me, the next step should be what? Can Jane apply the methodology that she has been taught in terms of project management? So can the department go there, get a spreadsheet where you have your problems as identified problems, but as well give us in terms of a project phase to say, how are you going to ensure that you respond to those issues, so that we know that when we go up until next year, when we close this chapter of sixth parliament, we have actually implemented the whole project plan with regards to issues that are here, like issues of accommodation, issues studying as far as, there should be a point where we're no longer asking why Jane is not paid. Because of there's money that has been put to improve ICT at Wescolo. So there are other things that I feel that where we are, Honorable Chair, we need a short-term, medium-term, and long-term report. Even if when we deal with your APPs and so on, let us have reports that will tell us about, in this 24/7, what is it that the department will be doing. Because, yes, we know there's an operation in terms of applicability, or it is 2023, 2024, first quarter, but can we have at least more lanyana, the business that will say, this is what we can do as a department to ensure we deal with other issues. The issue of RPL, Chairperson, I think I fully agree with Honorable Litsiye, and DG, you know my interest on this one. I think me and John will go together and see how best you can apply for this RPL. On this one, colleagues, I fully agree. This one is a transformational agenda of the NTR. So we cannot lose it. Let us deal with the problem. And Osampano Bona Khor Salbai is still, it's not true. Ogtafo Oberekise for something. So let us make sure this, whatever that is happening in the public domain, DG, you go out there and you correct it. So that you name and shame those who have actually benefited wrongly, but as well promote the system so that everybody must know what you are doing. The problem about the department, and I think, Chairperson, this will be my last time speaking about your communication strategy. I mean, Comrade Yabo has always, Honorable Yabo has advised in terms of how radically we want the department to be in terms of responding and telling the story on issues that you are dealing with on daily basis. Because we can only see you when you have to respond to the that one that was reported about UNISA is not the true reflection. This is we don't want that. We want you to even tell our people when you are failing to do what you have to do, all according to the plan. So in this period, Arleboneng DG, unse o bring a hope to our people. No, ERP, so this is what we are doing and so on. So recopile, little comfort zone, go out there and work. The issue here, I just want to advise. Last time you reported on the issue of war room, ne? So I think we need to get sense what is the program war room itself, and so that we can intensify it if it's not responsive to what we want it to be. So issue yeah, war room must be just visited. I think from that chairperson and what the honourable member have said. I think honourable member will liberate many people who cannot speak out there, and will highlight something that is very alarming in all these institutions. To say, as a department or institution, do we have a effective whistling blowing?
Yeah.
And one can say no, because if it came to this level that he becomes a member of parliament to tell his story, there's a problem.
Mm.
So, DG, before we lose many lives, one is too many. So let us make sure that we rectify things that are working, adibatle le budget, but they are already there on the system. It can be correct that people are killed, people are resigning, and yet we have a system to say people can, you know, report such and such. So I think you have liberated many, Honorable. They would come to the fourth chairperson in terms of telling their story so that we help them, at least as this Sikh parliament will be saying, we dealt with security, we dealt with transformational agenda, we dealt with people who are not capable to do their work. But lastly, let us make sure moving forward, we employ those who are equal to the task and fit for purpose.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity as well. I'll try my best not to reiterate some of the sentiments, DG. I'm happy that in the way I'm attending, I'm outsourcing, I think my colleagues touched on it quite vigorously for me to emphasize on it and even provided solutions in going around that. But I really want to hear on the part of the department, what are you envisioning in resolving this thing? So you, because it's not something that you're just hearing from us, it's something that you also said in the beginning of your presentation, even in your disclaimer as well, DG, you were able to say, well, you know, we are seeing that the primary source of these conflicts is these monies that have to go to business people. Like, people are fighting for money in decisions of higher learning. So I want to know, having noted that that is the situation, having noted what the recommendations of the portfolio committee are in dealing with that, like with insourcing and all those things, I want to hear from the department, as the executive, as the people that are up there, what then becomes, from your part, the solution in addressing this particular thing. And second to that, I'm not sure if it was said, but I think every time we get a recommendation that there should be a dissolution of council and management, it should be investigated much more deeper. I don't know how, because an independent assessor is probably as higher as you guys can go. But I think from then onwards, even Parliament must get involved with our own inquiries, Chairperson. On looking at these things as well, especially with the things that have come to the fourth namhlanje in the portfolio committee, and the things that we know as well, you know, because we don't know what the scope of the investigations are at the end of the day.
We don't know the scope of the assessor, what it is. We don't know what tools they utilize to investigate. Is it just interviews? You know, are you getting this information from just interviews? Are you following paper trail? Are you following the money? We don't know the full scope of these investigations, and that these recommendations can sometimes be so binding and so permanent without us even knowing the scope of the investigation. It's quite problematic. And second to that, if it's a criminal matter, it must be treated like a criminal matter. This thing of quoting criminal issues in universities as if they are ordinary issues that just require suspension or a dissolution of council is also a problem. If we're having criminals in councils, if we're having criminals in management, then they must be treated as criminals. And some issues just be taken straight from the assessor's table straight into the criminal justice system. No detour, because it's a crime. By simple virtue of the fact that it is a crime. And thirdly, DG, ukhuluma ngendaba yokuthi you made mention of Stellenbosch, you didn't go into it, but you cited your concerns, right, about the council recommended that the vice chancellor be removed and stuff like that, and I share those sentiments. My only concern is that we don't apply the same kind of understanding when it has to do with gender. So we will understand racism. You know, we will speak on racism. We will root it out, even if we will find it where even if it's hiding under the table. You know, but when it is misogynoir, when it is patriarchy, it feels like we have to go over and above to prove the point that it is patriarchy, despite knowing that superstructures have this kind of impact on people that have positions of power. Right? And even when I ask in detail about EU-NISA, it's primarily because of that, because these questions are not being asked. Same with UCT, and I think it's been raised, but I think on my part, what I want to also mix with that issue of UCT, Hilendabayama non-disclosure agreements. It made us fight a lot with the minister of the former Minister of Health, Uzweli Mkhize, during the whole COVID debacle and interacting with vaccine manufacturers and whatnot. The state cannot get into non-disclosure agreements. First of all, we are constitutionally obliged to make public any information that we have as the state. So there is no, we can't speak about this because a non-disclosure agreement was, this is constitutional. If I'm not mistaken, of Section 32, yes, that speaks about access to information. So we can't have people who represent the state, institutions that belong to the state, departments that represent the state, getting into non-disclosure agreements. It's against our constitution. And in fact, I'm even encouraged to say, mazichithwe. I don't know how, but we need to get that information, because there is absolutely no way people who represent the state in the capacity as ministers, as executives, and all of that, be able to say they are withholding information, because this is the kind of arrangement that's at play, and even undermine the constitution at that. Maybe there was no awareness of that particular part. Maybe I'm getting it on a different perspective. Maybe it is not you, or you know, maybe that was not what was being discussed. But if there is any information that you have about UCT, about all of these things, you can timeously plan it to reveal to the portfolio committee, but you can't keep it because you signed a non-disclosure agreement. You don't have that jurisdiction. You don't have those powers. You can't get into non-disclosure agreements. I need a little to do that. And lastly, I asked the minister about the appointment of Prof. Musia, right, and if the Higher Education Act was followed, right? And Section 44 of the Act says that the minister may appoint an independent assessor from the independent panel. So I want to find out, when was Professor Musia appointed to the independent panel? Because he ended his term as the chairperson of the Higher Education Committee, right? Of CHE, Commission for... Yes, correct. In July 2022. And then we'll get into other issues pertaining to that as well. It's just, I want to find out a date of when Professor Musia was appointed, and then after that, I'm sure the department also knows about the other issues emanating from that. What is the cooling period and all of those things? I'm asking this because I'm concerned if one independent assessor can assess TUT and UNISA, find similar findings in both institutions, but have different recommendations for these two institutions. I'm obviously concerned because it means we're not dealing with a principal issue. We're dealing with a people issue. We're dealing with a circumstantial issue. And it's something we're obviously going to pick up as a portfolio committee because then there must be some sort of principle that takes precedence in doing these kinds of things. That's why I'm saying, Chairperson Wuti, when these reports go out, especially with these damning and permanent revelations, they must come back to us and then we do our own inquiry as well. Because there's no scope. There's no scope of investigation. There's no penalty. We can't say if this person is stole for 3 months, then the punitive measure is this. Or if the person killed a person, then the punitive measure is this. If the person gave the tender to the wrong person or, you know, infringed some of those things, then the punitive measure, the consequence management measure is this. There is no template of dealing with these things. We are dealing with people are opining. And that is dangerous, that people can opine and have such damning or permanent opinions, you know, that aren't even based on principle. So that is my worry, DG. But I'm more interested in the Higher Education Act thing. And I'm saying this, I'm going to be honest with you, is because I want to also accuse you guys of something as well. Right? Because Tinas manje. So abanye benu sibazi like from a long time ago. Our Prof Musia sabazi, and it's not personal or anything, right? But sabazi, those are people who we went to school under their stewardship at the University of Pretoria. So we've got a history with them. We've got a history of looking you guys up on videos, Abu Makanya, the things they were saying in 2013 and what they are saying now, the things that the ministers were saying back then and what they are saying now. And I always remind the minister as well to say, but in 2012, this is what you said. And now in 2023, it must change. You know, it can't work like that. It really can't. Thank you very much, Chairperson and DJ.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chidwa. DG, I don't think there's a need for me to summarize after the engagements from members. I think you were here and you were attentively listening, but there are thematic sort of comments or questions that come through. And so I think where necessary you can sort of group, you know, those themes together. I also think in some cases there's misunderstanding as well, so I think there's need for clarity on certain things. Because Honourable Chidwa is raising the UCT matter again, the same way Honourable Khakhao had raised it. So maybe if you can just maybe DG Sotuka wasn't clear enough, but our understanding is that the NDA was between the council and the VC, so. I agree with what Honourable Chidwa is saying, to say because council represents a public institution, then you can't. Like, well, one would fairly argue that then it's of public interest. But just to make sure that wasn't signed with the department, but with council, and that becomes binding. I think what DG Sotuka was saying is that then becomes binding to the rest of us. And so the question of how do we see Kitaranjan Leot, I think is the question that then comes so that we are able to engage on these matters of public interest. That's just the one issue I think I was picking up a number of times. Honorable Khakhao is gone now, but I think we are also aware that shame, we don't think the former chair of council at DUT had anything to do with the passing of Prof Musia. No, not Prof Musia, of Prof Khwadi, sorry. Ah, Ntin Manj. I hope nothing happens, touch wood. But yeah, had nothing to do with the passing of Prof Khwadi. He was ill for quite some time, and I think we, most of us, were aware of that. I just thought I'd just clarify those two matters and hand over to you, DJ.
Thank you very much, Chair. May I take this opportunity on behalf of the department and the team from the department, and in the team we still have a strong constituency of colleagues from both the minister and the deputy minister's offices, as well as the senior DDGs in the team. So I think the approach in responding to this, Chair, firstly, it is to honour the questions by the honourable members by responding. But it is clear that in the majority of cases we need a detail, and we need proper responses. And I think in that case, it will be a combination of written response as well as the comments that we'll make now. Chair, allow me to just right at the beginning to indicate that in terms of Higher Education Act number 101 of 1997, any person who has been a member of council shall, against whom an independent assessor would have made adverse findings in their reports, shall not be eligible for appointment or election or reappointment or re-election as a member of the council of any public education institution. I think it's important that I make this point to respond generally to the questions around the integrity and credibility of the appointment process for Professor Mthia and the implications to those who are implicated in the reports. Hence, once these reports are compiled, they are gazetted so that they are a public document, so that no one institution could claim they had no access to such decisions. So it's important that I say this because particularly Honourable Chirwa, right at the end, you are raising really important questions around the integrity and credibility of our processes. So I hope in our response we are going to be specific enough. We are going to be detailed enough to give you comfort that firstly processes were followed, and this will then give you an opportunity to say, but I differ because in the law the following have said. So I think what we will do is we will respond in that way, but I have to appreciate the quest for good governance. I have to appreciate the intolerance for anything less than good governance in our institution. I have to also lift and identify a theme, as the chair of the portfolio committee has indicated, that perhaps in our response we must be more thematic, so that we are able to be more comprehensive, and also there is a way of tracking if these responses we are making, they are being followed through by the appropriate action in areas where this is necessary. I'm going to be very quick in pointing out the issues which we will respond to, even if it's not necessarily a complete response then. From your comments, Honourable Chair of the Portfolio Committee, you have identified that our response is not complete because it completely excludes student governance, the detail around that. And I think in this regard, Chair, we have indicated that even when we were citing in our presentation how we've responded to those issues, that we will provide that in writing. You also raised the issue around the silences in the profile of our councils with certain institutions, and I think primarily in UNISA. You know, this is as a result of the exodus of UNISA council members in the recent times, which are related to the issues that are currently, you know, but it is not necessarily a standard. It has not been like that, like all the time. It just has happened now. What we are presenting to the portfolio committees is the status quo as it is. The chair asked if we, chair, I think you are making a huge observation around maybe in our response. Is where we suggested that the law might need to be looked into. We may have overemphasized the purpose, you know, of that, and aligned it to issues that are raised here. I think when we raised the issue of amendments to the law, we were actually talking about transformation. We were talking about also the role of the department to continuously review its legislation to align it with the relevant needs of society. Any policymaker will indicate that, you know, if you write any policy, the DNA of that policy, the architecture of that policy, dating back from when the decision to choose to pursue one problem over the other is itself a matter under, you know, that should be interrogated, so that you don't find one administration politically that would then choose a set of problems and write policy about those problems because they interest a narrow a focus of a particular dominant group. You know, that's why research is necessary, among other things that one would say. So, Chair, there's quite a wide-ranging matters you've raised. The militarization of institutions of higher learning, an issue which you raised at a time that we were talking about the security threats to executives in our institutions. We will revert to some of the responses we have presented before to see how relevant they are in addressing your questions. And now you have indicated that the posture of UP, for example, as senior management on a number of issues that have emerged, in as much as we are claiming that we are arguing that there is stability, but actually that should be interrogated further, because there are issues that worry us, that notwithstanding the overall statement that we're making, but they still need to be looked into. And I think in the minister's opening remarks and my own comments, I have indicated my concern about officials and executives moving from one university to the other, and I had an engagement earlier on with my colleagues around that issue, and they've got a number of interesting proposals about how, for example, we could manage, you know, those issues so that accountability is ensured, and it worries us. And it's the same thing that Honorable Chira, you've raised around the NDA, to say that, you know, those silences that are locked into those agreements, you will find that when you open that box at another point, they were about gender violations, they were about, all the social ills that you know should concern us, and we should not be party to such concerns. And I think we have taken note of that very seriously. The chair of the portfolio committee also observed that, when the two black women resign in an institution of higher learning, it just can't be enough to provide a technical response to it without gazing on these issues with depth and demonstrate that you've applied yourself to those issues and satisfy us that nothing of it is as a result of a program to marginalize women to and so forth, which cannot be party to. Honorable Kau is not here anymore. I would have added, and I think you've assisted me, Chair, by indicating that Professor Dan Hwadi, after he was appointed, firstly, all of us know him very well. He was in the system for many years in the Northwest University, as a vice chancellor. So it was not a surprise when he was appointed at VUT because the experience was there. But what then happened was that, of course, our processes would not have picked up that he was not well, at that time. And he continuously struggled for health as he was, executing his duties. I suspect that because there was an investigation that was then conducted after his suspension, that investigation would have picked up that notwithstanding some of the shortfalls that might have been identified, there would also be a reference to his ill health, which led to him not to attend certain responsibilities regularly or as regular as he was. But knowing him over many years, it's one of those pillars in the system that, may his soul rest in peace. He would have been a presence in the system that is an asset for all of us. But obviously, we cannot speak about investigations by institutions whose report we have not seen. But I don't think that his passing on is related to any underhandedness of any kind. I think we must just rest this one and not open it up again. What Honorable Kakao has done is to also advise that we need to look at the entire history around the UCT and not just deal with the issues that are a focus of the very people who actually wanted to pick and choose who they want to remain in that institution. Instead, we must actually look into even the period before it. And she makes an observation about the period of Dr. Price in the institution. May I indicate, Chair, that all of these issues have been recorded? I think I'm not intending to go through each honorable member's input. I'm just demonstrating that we have copiously picked up all the issues that have been raised. Honorable Ngobo, the issue of the UWC model, I think that the point there is that we must share those experiences. In fact, I was sharing, Chair, my interview with the VC at UWC at a time when there was an issue, around the death of a student, and there was a protest at the institution, and I was asking how regular is interaction between management and SRC, because in my own observation, I think there is inadequacy in the manner in which these interactions are happening. And in his response, he was very frank with me to say, look, once a week I make this. And to me, the minute he responded like this, I thought, I no longer can generalize that all VCs have the same approach around these matters. Because here is UWC for me, presenting an example that we can actually follow. And I think I agree with Honorable Ngobo that if we observe good practices, we must then replicate those good practices. Honorable Zondo, I don't see him, but he's raised issues around UKZN, student accommodation, student leaders that are suspended and expelled without any due process at UKZN. I think these now have been brought to our attention. Can I commit, Chair, that we will report on how we have pursued this issue? And I think it cannot be raised with us and then it disappears. We will follow on it and we will hopefully sufficiently address it. Honorable, let's see a comprehensive set of observation, almost a philosophy of why it is important that good governance is not negotiable in our institutions. You have also been generous to share with us your suggestions about what can be done. We appreciate this because then it's not only that we are identifying problems, but there's also particularly your indication that the capacitation of newly elected SRCs engagement with specific institutions is important. The interrogation of council is what you have proposed. And I think all of these are instruments which are going to be brought before the minister as he's applying his mind on a variety of reports that are before him before he finalizes on some of these issues. I think we appreciate this a lot. I think it's important because the minister in his opening remarks did indicate that it's important that the assessor's report since 2000 are analyzed properly so that we can establish the extent to which these could be utilized. But Honorable, let's see, in his input, has further enriched this conversation by asking a couple of questions. For example, what are the cost implications for all of these assessors initiatives and administration? And I think this is really a huge question because on one hand, when you appoint an administrator, that means you are not paying the salary of the vice chancellor at the time and a number of board members. So on one hand, you are saving because you are not appointed, they are not in place. But on the other hand, you are also paying the assessors. It requires a thorough and a detailed analysis that will look at cost and benefits, of the policy. Remember that these are policy instruments sponsored by the Higher Education Act itself, and not just our own. Your observation that in the period and era of Professor Makgoba, there were milestones, in the UKZN, that were really encouraging signs of an institution that was growing and so on, and that we might at this point in time, under a different leadership, be struggling to maintain this. And it's important for us to pay attention, particularly in the light of students suspended without any due process. It cannot be associated with the standards set by the earlier administration. The Honorable Yabo has made a detailed, a generous, sharing with us of the issues around the culture of accumulation in our institution and why this culture must be dealt with, not in a piecemeal kind of way, but in a carefully thought through, and systemic and structured way. And he observes that the elite that runs these institutions itself cannot be, you know, spared in terms of the analysis of the regression that we have identified in these institutions in relation to governance of such institutions. I think these comments are aligned to some of other. Honorable Shikombane, thank you very much. I think that you have shared with us your own personal experience also lends integrity in the stories that must inform our progress, but also it inspires us to look more carefully at how we deal with these matters. But you do say there must be a cautionary approach in the processing of the UNISA report, because the report might not be without impurities that undermine what Honorable Chilwa later suggested. It's about the integrity and credibility of the reports as well. The Minister has summarized the issues, and I'm not going to go back to them. Honorable Sibiya, how many years for the MUT administrator? It's 18 months, to be specific, the term, but the administrator has been there for almost 12 months now, so you can calculate what remains of the original 18 months is probably something, you know, between...
18 months is the balance.
Okay, yeah. So 18 months is the balance. All right. Honorable Mananiso, whether or not administrators have assisted to improve governance, I think it's a recurring theme, Honorable Chair, since the presentation by the Minister. I think in this particular portfolio committee, the issue of previous reports and how we utilize these reports to turn around the system has been made very clear. In my engagement at our short break with the team, I realized, Chair, that there is a report already that has been drafted, but it goes back to 2012. But it is also itself not complete. And because it is not complete, first, it is an indication that some work has already been started. But second, it is also that the commitment is to go back beyond just 2012 so that we cover the many years, you know, before that. It is clear, if you look at that report, that there are certain repetitions, you know, there are certain themes that cut across all administrations, but there are also specifically unique characteristics. For example, CUT as well as MUT, you can actually see that this is recurring. So overall, Chair, I think our point, Honorable Mananiso, the RPL matter is huge. I don't think what the Minister has said that we can add on what he has said, our commitment to maintaining the integrity of the RPL process, but also to improve it. Recently, there's been an indication that there is a number of unqualified officials and so on in the public service, and therefore the RPL processes needs to be looked into. So there is an interest in government across the board to look into RPL and reassert its importance as an assessment tool in the hands of you know, practitioners, particularly in the education and training environment. The war room issue, indeed our war room, our communication units also do stakeholder, you know, management. Over time, they've established this instrument of the war room in the system. We keep talking about it, but I think what you're saying is that let's share, you know, how it works so that we can see if it can be used to achieve broader issues. Indeed, I can agree with you. Whistleblowing mechanisms cannot be adequate. We must keep looking into this, and you also suggest that there are provinces that have demonstrated good practices, and I suspect that the provinces that you've cited the provinces where the constituency of the honorable member is, and there's no doubt that we are excited about the that leadership, and we want to see that that is consistent across all departments. Employment of fit for purpose individuals should be non-negotiable, and we will continue to do so. But once we have appointed individuals, support them, provide necessary support to them. Honorable Chair, there is one question which pertains to the costs, you know, of the assessors, and I think this one we will deal with that in detail. But we have noted it, and I think in our response we will going back to 2000 attempt to respond to it. May I request, with your permission, Chair, if there is any other matter that I might have omitted, if our starting with our advisors in the Office of the Minister who are here, and the DDG, if there are any matters that we could also add in our response to honour the questions of our portfolio committee.
The advisors are gone, so it would just be DDG Sotigwa, not so? And then the colleague from, there was a colleague you were with from legal. I mean, it would be great to hear her perspective, for example, on this question of the non-disclosure agreement, perspective on something Honourable Chura raised, Nana, as well. We treat an NDA in a corner logo. So just a perspective from legal in terms of some of these questions that members had. So I think for me, let's get the response from colleagues in the legal unit from some of the things members have said, and then let's get a response from DDG Sotigwa. I think we'll take it like that.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members. It's because those are easy cases. Chairperson, the issue of an NDA is a very tricky one, in that for some reason it is always between two parties. And the one that we are using as an example, which is the UCT one, by the time the VC approached the minister, I remember it was myself and DDG Sotigwa. We were not aware that she had already signed the NDA. And legally, the NDA can only be revisited by the same people who had signed it. And by that time, minister could not intervene. He did come to me to ask for an advice, and I said, the horse has bolted out of the stable. How we wish that she should have involved the minister before signing, because by that time, minister had an opportunity to intervene on her behalf. Unfortunately, it was too late. However, legally still, it is allowed for the two parties to revise what is in the NDA. And therefore, depending on whether the VC would want to go back and revise what she has signed for, that she has an opportunity to go back and do. That is allowed legally. But the minister at this point in time cannot intervene. Unfortunately, it is too late for him. Thank you.
Sorry, if you could just also unpack, I mean, the sentiment of the committee is that this NDA is sort of like a hindrance and a barrier to us really being able to resolve issues in the sector. It's like, yeah, you know, there's many members spoke to that, I think. Lizzy, Chira, myself, yeah, a lot of us spoke to this thing of, but we can't, we don't know what happened. But, and then also from a financial perspective. So I guess what we're asking is that, is our question legally, does it legally stand? Does it make sense what we are concerned about? Thanks.
Okay. It does make a lot of sense considering that this is public money that has been signed for. So I will go back to the office to check at what other legal options minister can look at in trying to force the council, because we are now left with the council. Remember, she's no longer in the system. And ask the council to at least take the minister into confidence as to what exactly happened. How did they even reach a point of signing an NDE with her? And I think if we look at the Act, it does allow minister those kinds of interventions, but we need to be very strategic in, because obviously they will also go get their legal advisors to make sure that they don't give us what we are looking for. So myself alone, I must say, I'll try and get some senior counsel to assist me in looking at what options and strategy we can use to make sure that at least they come to the table. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much. Didi Sokwikwa?
I think there are just two matters that DG didn't cover, I according to my tracking system. The one was what support systems have we provided post-administration so that they don't regress. So I just want to indicate, you know, Chair, this is really, we have a team that are very vigorous about this particular one. We sat with, I think it was MUT at one stage, and the other one is UFH Forte. The parties on the receiving end were not happy with us when we told them they have no choice but to report every 2 months. They complained bitterly about the administrative work we are imposing. We even went as far as saying, then you must appoint a project manager whose job will be to assist us in reporting so that we do not regress. So that's where we are with this. Some of my own staff, my own officials don't like these conversations. And invariably, the vice chancellors also don't, because they feel like we are undermining them. But of course, ours is to ensure that we do not incur yet another administrator or another assessor in that particular environment. Ours, as DG said in the beginning, is not to micromanage. But in this instance, every 2 months, we meet with the institutions. Then a quick one, I think the other one that we may have missed, DG, was on the standardized security plan. And there we agreed with the security heads of security of all the universities that we would meet every quarter. Firstly, to ensure that they are developing a security policy. Some universities don't have any. And when you have a security policy, you are then able to standardize how you respond to crisis and how your stakeholders respond to the same crisis. So our next meeting is due, which is the second meeting with a security group, by end of June. And we're happy to share our reports with you, but at the moment we're giving them to Minister, and the SUPS also looks at those reports. We also invite the security unions so that they understand, and there's some understanding in the cooperative approach towards managing security. But of course the point was made, why don't we involve MECs, premiers and council? I think that's an important point. We haven't done that yet. We will discuss with DG and how we incorporate them, because obviously we also don't want their time restrictions to inhibit our progress. But it's certainly something that I will speak to DG about. Thank you, Manisa. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the DG, DDG Sokwekwa, our advocate who never loses. Thank you very much to all members of the committee, really, for always, you know, making such robust engagements. I'm also excited to hear more from our newest member, Honorable Shikwambana. I think, DG, also there were other questions that you have left out, and please respond to them in writing. Honorable Ngobo wanted to be taken into confidence on what systems are we using or putting in place to ensure that we monitor and track the recycling. I heard Minister at the beginning speaking about a tracking system. Yeah, I heard it, but Honorable Ngobo didn't hear it. So please, can you respond to that in writing so that it's captured? I also want to suggest that, you see, this strengthening of the IT data management system, or as Honorable Lutia, how do I say it? But we need to have systems, like digital systems, very overarching. We've spoken about it from a NASFAS perspective. We've spoken about it from a CETA double-dipping perspective, but even from a human resource capacity perspective, who's the staff component? Who works in DHET? Who works in DHET, and how are they moving? And if there is a way for us to miraculously create this centralized system where we can see movement of people in and out of our system, that's a kind of, like, digitization that we want to see, and digital coordination we want to see in terms of the data and the sector. So I'm adding this one to DG, to that engagement we had during the APPs. Honorable Chirwa said there's no scope. People just go and investigate, and we don't know. Our understanding is that before any assessor or administrator goes in, there is terms of reference, there's a scope. So can we please bring Honorable Chira into confidence on what scope these people are using to just enter these institutions? But be specific about when you respond. We highlight the scope that they're using. And then we can also, from there we're able to disagree or disagree on the scope. But I'd like to believe people can't just enter our institutions without telling us exactly what they're looking into in our institutions, if they've been sent on behalf of the minister. Also, so that we can kuza them to say, but this is not what you were supposed to do. And then, I'm sorry, members, I'm trying my best to, I just want to make sure that we're not, you know, just having a meeting for the sake of. Can we please write to Forte, if they will respond, DDG Sokwekwa, to respond to this question that Honorable Khakao had on around Mr. I don't know, Ijoma or something like that. Minister was good to say that he doesn't know. So let's write to Forte and get them to respond. Honorable Lithia, you're disturbing me. Let's write to Forte and then get them to respond to that question that was posed by Honorable Khakao. I think Minister tried to respond to the issues of RPL and all of that, but I think it needs writing. I think we must respond to it in writing, so that, because on the RPL issue, we need to be able to, as a committee, also, you know, there are so many people who could benefit from RPL. People who have, you can't even equate the amount of experience they have to a qualification. But today they are unable to get opportunities, they are unemployed. because hey, two of them have a master's and a PhD. Abanye abantu abanama masters akuna lutho akuna capacity dololo kodwa umuntu une master's ne PhD. So we need to understand that process so that members are also able to share this information with citizens and afford them an opportunity to benefit from it. You know, Honorable Shikwambana said, listed a whole lot of challenges and then said, what are you doing? We've tried to respond to him, but I think we can be more detailed. You see, another thing, DG, saying I have the department, because we listen to you when you bring APPs to us. We listen to you when we listen. So I get frustrated when you are not responding adequately. I mean, on the issue that Honorable Itzie mentioned, he says we must induct SRCs. SRC induction for TVETs and universities, SRCs happens. I went through it and then I disrupted it. I said, we want to train us, but we want to protest. I know it happens every year, and it still gets disrupted, President. I don't know if your generation allowed it to take place, but it still gets disrupted. I'm told last year, TVET SRCs were being inducted, and they refused. So it's seemingly happening, Honorable Litsiye. The training is seemingly happening, but it's not effective, one, because we still have poor cooperative governance between SRCs and management. I also think it's a bit one-sided, because who's making sure that management knows how to cooperatively govern with students? So we are strengthening students, but are we strengthening management to be able to receive this strengthened student leadership? So, and again, I've been saying this thing on DIRCO. DIRCO has a training program on conflict management negotiation. It's a long thing like that. They have it. All we have to do as DHET is go knock on the DG's door there, say, DG, I will gather my people in a room. Can you come and get your team to come and facilitate this? I've been asking for this for 3-4 years now, DG. Can we just act on it, please? Because we follow your social media pages. I've never seen it happen. So I don't think it has happened. On outsourcing, you haven't really responded, DG. That outsourcing just can happen. We need to push harder. We need to ask people, why haven't they? We've tried as a committee to ask many institutions as they come, why haven't you insourced workers? We've tried. But we also need your support on that regard and also your monitoring of that, but also to monitor the success of insourcing. Because there have been concerns post the train of insourcing that took place. There were concerns to say the quality of service delivery is to be questioned. But we know the pros of insourcing, and so we have to learn how to work around those particular challenges that come with it. I think I'll leave it at that. I think I just tried to pick up on some matters that members had listed, and I just felt we were quite flat on. And I understand that time is also a limitation. So, but I think if we can respond to those matters in writing, it would really assist us. That was it. So thank you very much to yourself, DG. Thank you very much, DG Sokwikwa. We will expect those responses within the next 7 working days. It will be the last time you ask us. Okay, Honorable Shikoman, I'll take you because this is your maiden committee meeting. Okay. Can we please respond to that issue of the issue that Honorable Shikwambana mentioned about Mpumalanga? We also have had a meeting with DBE, Honorable Shikwambana. We've had many meetings with DBE on cross-cutting matters like the one you're raising. What we'll make sure is that the Secretariat sends you some of those minutes. just so you can pick up on where we've been on that conversation. But I think the matter that you raised is definitely a very important one, and please respond to that one, DG. I mean, some of it is to also is not for you to respond and say we're doing something, but it's for you to respond and say we note this matter and we're going to go to DBE and say, DBE, our members are raising X, Y, and Z. Can you guys please look into it? With that being said, DG, it's the last time for the next 2 and a bit months that you will be expected to submit something in writing for the next 7 days. We are going on constituency period as members for 2 and a bit months. But I don't think it's the last time you'll hear from us, because we know that the issues in our sector continue to arise and we are forced to raise them with yourselves. One matter that I think we really need to try, we want to trust that whilst we are away, DG, you are working on, is NAFIS. It's a real crisis. They are just not responsive. It just doesn't end, DG. It just does not end in Kenya's NAFIS. As the pale. And even members are getting this, like, members are just like, we are SARS man. We don't even know who to write to anymore there to say, can you respond to this issue? Even the very same chairperson, very same CEO is frustrated that NABO, when they ask for queries, or they ask queries to be looked into, they don't get responses quick enough. That's the entire leadership of the institution itself. So we have a real crisis there. I do not know what we're going to do. And I pay onkumuntu makakubona onibo shikwambana, now that they know that you are here. You are NSFAS here written on your face. So, and I'm sure before that, by virtue of being the former president of the student command, the former president of an institution, you were already in jail, working NSFAS center. But now it's going to be worse. You are head office itself. But a head office that can't respond effectively, because where you're supposed to be getting support, kutuli. So we have a huge crisis, DG, there, and we're really hoping that, because as we go now to our constituencies, people are going to see us all the time. They're going to be asking us to respond all the time. We need to be supported to have an effective way of troubleshooting these matters when it comes to NSFAS in particular. And we actually want to even further request that there be an office that is allocated to us as a committee, maybe under your office or somewhere, one of your PLO. We know Mr. David there is very, you know, responsive. Because we'll be receiving queries, the CETA didn't respond to what, I didn't get my stipend. So we need to be able to, in that moment, send someone a text and at least know that in the next 24 hours it will be responded to. You know, we don't want to be saying, no, they must respond now. You know, at least we can say, let's agree that in the next 24 hours we try and get a response. And you can even say, no, in the next 24 hours I will have a response for you. So let's consider that, DG, because I know members here are going to be on the ground for the next 2 months, so they're going to get all these matters brought to them. But I think that's pretty much it in relation to yourselves. To members, we will see each other. This is our last meeting. We will see each other in 2.5 months' time. I don't know. I don't think we've received enough inputs from yourselves in terms of what you'd like to see on the committee program. Please make sure you submit that. Then that goes to yourself, DG, as well. We have also requested that from them, I think. Okay, but that invitation is open to say if there are matters that the department would like to bring to the attention of the committee, please submit, and then we'll see, of course, how we, you know, put that together in the committee program. In terms of the international study tour, I've been getting some interesting documents coming to my office. I hope in the next couple of weeks we'll be able to give members an exciting response. We are requesting an indication of members with passports and all of that, and if everyone has their official blue passport. Honorable Shikwambana, since you're new, please just think your party should be, your caucus should be able to help you to identify the person who's supposed to take you to Home Affairs and you do your blue passport. So if we can all just check that, and then please indicate that to Shanaz. Shanaz is the Secretary for Science and Innovation. Anel is the Secretary for Higher Education. I think, am I leaving anything out? You want to deal with them now? Okay. I don't think we meet quorum. We do? Okay, Anil is being a CEO on me. He's not letting me go. Okay. DG, if you, Khalif can just be patient with us, because I don't want to create just pity. We're just going to adopt minutes and reports. Okay, while I find that, we can take a 1 minute ad break. Thanks, DG.
Instead, the province prefers Funza Lushaka graduates. Am I correct, Honorable? Yeah. You know, this is a difficult one, Chair, because Funza Lushaka is a dedicated, you know, bursary program that DBE uses to produce to fund teachers. So when they graduate, they obviously will prioritize the beneficiaries in that regard. I think the concern is nepotism, and Chair, I think we note this, and perhaps it's a matter which I can raise with the DG of Basic Education, so that we increase and improve on the oversight of this. PS also speak to the HOD in the province around the appointment of, you know, I think it's something that is worth looking into because it has been brought into our attention. But I don't believe, Chair, that it is beyond us in terms of resolving it. I hope that suffices, Honorable Sukoma.
All right, perfect. Thank you, DG, for that ad break. you assisted. Quickly, honourable members, on the we're going to adopt minutes from the 2nd, the 7th, the 2nd and the 7th of June, the 12th of May, the 17th of May, the 19th of May, the 31st of May, and then the report on the fourth quarter financial. A report of the Department of Higher Education and Training, as well as the report on the fourth quarter for the Department of DSI, and then lastly is the report on our engagement with the NSF and the Water Energy and Water CETA. So I think I'll start with the minutes from May in particular. Can I note any members who would like to make any amendments to those minutes? The minutes from May. Okay, I don't see amendments. Can I note members who'd like to adopt those minutes? Honourable Mananis.
Chairperson, I thought you were going to be progressive as usual. You see, when you're noting them as they are, one have went through all those minutes and those that I've attended, and one can confirm from my side that minutes are a true reflection of the meeting. I've went through them and I've noted that as you are actually naming them per the headings, I've never seen anything that needs to be amended. Thank you.
Okay, so those are the minutes from May. Okay. All right, so the Honorable Mananiso has moved for the adoption of the minutes from May. Can I note a member who would like to second the adoption? I'm seconding all the minutes. Thank you very much, Mam Sibiya. So the minutes for May have been adopted by Honorable Sibiya, sorry, Honorable Mananiso, and seconded by Honorable Sibiya. Then I've moved to the minutes from June. We have minutes on the 2nd of June when we're dealing with the quarterly reports, as well as the, no, sorry. Yeah, we were dealing with the fourth quarter expenditure and performance report 2022-2023, and it was what was left over from that particular engagement. They were responding to us, and then it was the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative briefing by the DSI and the HSRC and NYDA. And then on the 7th of June, it was last week, where we had that really exciting engagement with the TVETs, Northlink and Litaba. Can I note members would like to adopt those minutes? Honorable Mananiso.
Yeah. I hereby adopt the minutes of the 2nd, 6th, 23 to the 7th, 6th, 23 as a true reflection of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mananiso. Honorable Sibiya.
Okay, Chair. I'm supporting all the minutes as adopted.
Thank you, Honorable Sibiya. June have thus been adopted by Honorable Mananiso and seconded by Honorable Sibiya. We'll then go to the reports. I'll take all three reports at the same time. So it was DHET's quarterly report 2022-2023, DSI's 2022-2023, as well as the NSF and Energy and Water CETA briefing. Can I note members who have any amendments? If not, can I go to adoption?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'm adopting the report as it is.
My Honorable Mananiso.
Yeah, thank you. I second the report as a true reflection of the meetings, all four sets of those reports. Thank you.
Thank you, three sets. Thank you very much, Honorable Sibiya, for adopting those three reports, and Honorable Mananiso for seconding those reports. Honorable Shikwambana and Honorable Ngobo, you know, Honorable Khakhao the other day did something very revolutionary. She seconded minutes. In fact, I think she even moved for the actual adoption. She's something very revolutionary. You know, don't be shy, colleagues. If you're in the meeting and the meeting, you know, looks like a meeting you were in, don't be shy to just adopt those minutes. But that's just on a lighter note. I'd like to believe then CEO of the committee that we're done. All right. Wishing you all a pleasant break. Please stay safe. We really want to see all of you again. Ningali, yabo masemgcoka bo blue nabo red nabo green, masive and right on the ground. Thank you so much, colleagues.